back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, June 14th. We're coming to you live today from SDN Communications in Sioux Falls. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. You can also drop us a midday and drop us an email. Send it to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists, Mac Guru Joel Brovelite is here. Nine Clouds Bro founder John T. Meyer joins us, as well as SDN's sales engineer Amos Aesop is here today. Hey, Amos. And from Peer, Jeff Litterick joins us. He's a technology integration specialist. He's with us today as well. We have a special guest in the studio today. It's Josh Rick from String Theory Luthieri. Did I get that right, Josh?
That's correct.
You are a musical instrument repair guy. And you find yourself on a technology show. I think we should probably explain why that is. You've gained knowledge in your business of musical instrument repair by using the internet. Knowledge that a lot of times is gained only by, you know, sometimes years long apprenticeships.
Correct.
Yep. And you and your wife, and is it your brother or your brother-in-law that's big into the, you know, do-it-yourself or life hack? Or
brother-in-law.
Okay, so brother-in-law. So on many levels, professional and personal, you're into this whole thing.
Absolutely.
And let's help explain maybe what this whole thing is. Joel, I know we talked right before the show, you know, a lot of terms that are thrown around, makers and do-it-yourself and life hack, and those are maybe all different things, but they're all kind of the same.
Yeah, exactly. The type of thing that Josh does or maybe does, you know, in his off time, or things that I do, could range all the way from learning how to make, not necessarily computer related, learn how to make a sauce for beef Wellington, all the way to something we talked about just a second ago, making your own CNC computer aided router machine for, you know, creating all sorts of things. And it runs the gamut. And what we're seeing, and by we, I mean just kind of society in general, is seeing people moving away from having to maybe go to school, even though we should say Josh went to school for instrument repair for at least 1 year, right?
Yep.
Is that correct?
That's right.
So he has formal training, but like many other people, he's learned that the best training you can do in your environment, whether it's your passion for cooking or woodworking or computers, is to find the experts on the internet through forums and websites like Instructables or YouTube.
Well, even I think, you know, I'd say this is maybe a generalization, but if you're under 35 and you have a question, you go to Google. You type, like I tell people, type your question into Google, and that's where you can find your answer. It's not that I don't want to help them. That's where we have this wealth of knowledge just at our fingertips.
You're so totally right. I sometimes marvel. People will ask me a question like, you could find that out just by typing that question into Google. So anyway, so Josh, what exactly? In a typical day, say you're repairing an instrument, what might you use technology, specifically the internet, for?
Well, most often it's to find out specific information about, say, a particular model of instrument, or a recent example would be Gibson Les Pauls, where they've gone through
the guitar,
right? Uh-huh. They've gone through a variety of different changes over the years, and they're minor things that unless I had access to that information online without seeing a lineup of the instruments over the lifetime, I wouldn't be able to.
So how would that have been done, let's say, before the internet? How would that have been done? I mean, so what you're saying is somebody brings a Gibson Les Paul guitar in and needs it repaired, and it's 72. What happens? What do you do?
Well, you know, of course, depending on what the problem is, I would... you know, to find out specifics about it, I would go online. In the past, there were certainly books available. There still are books available that have this information, but you don't
probably couldn't get
have
it repaired in Sioux Falls. You'd probably have to go to Chicago or
for,
the factory
for really specific things. Yeah, absolutely.
So now you just is there a certain website for that particular problem, or is it just overall?
Well, as I've mentioned before, there tends to be instrument specific forums. And these people get really nerdy about a particular kind of instrument. And for Les Paul, it's called My Les Paul Forum. You know, and nice. There's hundreds of probably thousands of threads on there, and every little issue you could imagine has been discussed in detail.
Would you say that has trends in techniques or different ways to fix the instruments changed since you've been in school?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or is this an industry that's been the same for 30
no,
years?
No, there's certain things that do remain, you know, the same, because a lot of it is based from woodworking and there's only so many ways to go about things. But techniques definitely have developed with technology. I mean, the vacuum clamping, for example, is something that's come up in recent history. Bending sides for acoustic guitars using silicone heating blankets is something that is, you know, a more modern version of what we used to do over a hot pipe. That, you know, you heat up a pipe with a blowtorch or, you know, an electrical element.
Yeah, and I guess that's a part I hadn't thought about. So
that's
where this
movement gets really interesting. Yeah, yeah. I mean, your industry is probably a little slow moving, but if we're talking anything, you know, fixing computers, any textbook is going to be irrelevant by the time it hits the shelves.
Yeah, well, I bet it isn't actually slow moving. I'll bet, you know, things like just advancements in adhesives and things like that have really turned things on there. And do you find a lot of resistance from people that do the same thing you do for, you know, learning how to do something, you know, through a YouTube video or something?
Not a lot. There's definitely some people who have been in the field for a long time that are, you know, kind of old school and set in their ways. But generally speaking, everybody's pretty willing to adapt to new technology or new techniques if they produce a better result. You know, and that's really what it comes down to. But you mentioned adhesives, and still by far the most used adhesive is hide glue. It's the same stuff that's been used for 400 or 500 years. You know,
do you think that that's habit or tradition?
It's just a better product for what we're doing. It has the better properties. But one cool example of introducing, you know, high tech into my field. I was at the Violin Society of America convention last winter, and there was a booth there. They sometimes in a big repair, you have to remove some wood and fit a patch into an area. And this company uses laser scanners, and they'll scan the area that needs to be replaced, and then they, you know, then duplicate it on a CNC, and you have a perfectly fit patch. It's something that we would normally do.
A CNC, we should tell people, is, can you describe what a CNC machine might be?
Well, it's computer numerical control, I believe, is what it stands for. And it's basically a router with usually at least three axes. Some of them have five.
So you can have it, so the machine cuts out precisely the patch that you need.
Exactly, within very fine tolerances.
And that's better, I suppose, a lot more accurate than any human could do.
And certainly faster.
Yeah, there you go, faster.
How has the internet created maybe a community around this? I mean, how many people do what you do in America, do you think?
Oh, thousands, I'm sure.
Thousands, okay. But yeah. Do you feel like you're more connected or have built relationships or people you can bounce ideas off of?
Yeah, I participate in some forums, not as actively as I probably should. I tend to read a lot more than posting. But here's a good example. Now we can talk to people all over the world in, you know, for free in real time. So a good friend of mine is living in Scotland, who is I very much respect his work, and if I have questions, I can contact him, you know, and it doesn't cost me international, you know, calling fees.
Sure.
And it doesn't cost him, and you get video.
Yeah, exactly. And so I can show him exactly what we're dealing with.
Interesting.
And get feedback in real time.
So what, prior to, I guess, the internet and video and all this, you may have to go seek somebody to ask a question.
Yeah.
And that person may not be anywhere near us.
Exactly.
Geographically, and that could take days to get there and be very expensive. So it really makes the whole repair issue more efficient, I guess.
I would agree with that. I mean, you know, one thing we all, in my field, we all kind of pride ourselves on ingenuity and trying to, you have to come up with creative solutions a lot of times because you see different problems over and over again. But to have the ability to bounce it off of somebody who has encountered that issue and can say, no, I tried that didn't work. You can skip a couple steps, you know.
Does technology ever get in the way of getting this done? I mean, do you find yourself going after a case that maybe you wouldn't have a few years ago? You know, something that's so far gone that you would have maybe cut bait and run, to use that euphemism.
I don't think so. I guess the one thing I would say, you know, there's this issue of choice and how choices can really become debilitating. And sometimes if you come across too many options for how to approach something, it kind of makes me less confident in that I'm choosing the right one, you know, whereas otherwise, if I didn't have so many options, I would just know that this is the right thing to do.
If you just had a teacher and you said, well, we do it this way because we do it this way,
sure.
It, of course, makes it much easier.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can totally see that. You know, there's this renaissance out there for, you know, small one, two people shops for creating, you know, what we would consider maybe even outdated things like tools. I know there's more tool makers now in the United States than ever, just small companies that make hand planes and screwdrivers and things like that. Do you think that same thing carries through instruments and instrument making? Are there more small shops than there ever was?
I think there are. I mean, there's still the big ones that are going to be your major players, but yeah, because of this access to information and knowledge, I think people are, it gives them confidence that they can set out on their own and don't necessarily have to go through the traditional steps of a long-term apprenticeship or, you know, have to go and work for somebody for a long time, which that definitely has its benefits, no doubt about it. And, you know, I found my way into how I approach my business through a, you know, particular set of circumstances. And I wouldn't say it's the best way to go about it, but it's working. So, but yeah, I do think it gives people the confidence to kind of set out on their own.
So you use the internet to help you find new ways to fix your tools. Do you also use the internet to help people find you as a business? How do you find your customers?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a website that could constantly be updated. It's stringtheorylutheri.com. I'm also on Facebook under String Theory Music. And we do get a lot of inquiries based on our online presence. And, you know, I'm ashamed to say it's not nearly as up to date as it should be. And, you know, I'm not great about that because I'm running
well,
a business.
Well, even that, the interesting thing is even that five years ago, it was so much harder to, you know, run your own website and run your own business. And now
sure.
The tools have become much easier. So, and I just predict that'll get easier.
Well, I want to remind listeners, the list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show, you can find posted to the web almost as it happens on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. We'll go ahead and like you, and maybe you'll like us back on Facebook and get a few people in there. So we've talked about the business aspect of this whole creative way of solving problems. You're also told me yesterday that there's really a personal side to this as well. And I think maybe that's the part that a lot of our listeners are going to relate to, the do-it-yourself and the making of, you know, recipes and anything. I mean, from candles to, I've seen some amazing things that creatively that people are doing and taking really nice resolution photos of and posting to websites like Pinterest.
Even photos, you know, I mean, learn how to take better photographs, even if it's just a hobby for you. So I think that whole maker and life hack, you know, whatever word you want to use, I think that's slowly leaking into everybody's daily life, whether you know it or not. Certainly anybody in the, you know, like we said, 35 or younger, 40 or younger, I like to say that because I'm in that section now.
John, are there other websites like Pinterest, or is Pinterest the juggernaut when it comes to things like this?
Well, my first thought would be Lifehacker, that website, if you've heard of that one.
How appropriate.
I think we've probably talked about it on the show before in passing.
Yeah, it's a very, very popular content news site, really, but it's all about, you know, how can you do things for cheaper? How can you build things out of products you have in your house? How can you get better sleep? How can you, you know, work faster, be more productive at email, you know, whatever it might be.
What did Pinterest do? Did they take and just make it more social?
Well, I don't know if I would say that that this trend lives on Pinterest as well. I mean, I think Pinterest is more of a play for recipes, homemaking. I guess it depends on how you want to classify life hacking. I think people always did that. People were, you know, cooking things at home and building arts and crafts projects. But what Pinterest did, yes, was make it more social. So now I can get inspired. I can do something I've never tried before.
Yeah, I mean, I feel, jump in here, Josh, if you think otherwise. I feel Pinterest is more like a catalog, a window into what people might be doing, and then a website like Lifehacker or the one I mentioned, Instructables, might be where you might go, or YouTube, where to go to actually do such a thing.
I think what's been interesting, what Pinterest has done, is it makes it really difficult for creatives and artists to try to be new, to be unique and new. I mean, it's good. That's a good thing. It challenges them and it pushes them. But you can see everything out there. Where you might have been doing something that you thought was new before, and now with Pinterest, you're like, oh, that person already did that. I want that idea. I mean,
you may find a whole other community you didn't know exist. You thought you were on an island, and
and recently Pinterest created private Pinterest boards, and so I'm engaged, and we're working on planning a wedding, and so Paige and her mom have a private Pinterest board where they can pin ideas for table decorations, wedding dress ideas, flowers, whatever it might be, and share that. Keep it away from me, you know?
Mm. Another site I might mention is Etsy, which, it has a kind of a Pinterest feel about it, but it provides a way for people who are doing these kinds of things to monetize it, which,
a marketplace.
Yeah, it's a marketplace, but you can cruise through it and find all these cool ideas, if you are in the DIY side of things. But for the people who are doing this stuff, the whole DIY trend, on some level, I feel like it's in a whole emerging market because
Absolutely.
There is a way to monetize this stuff. And it's providing a whole different set of consumer goods to the world that, and through individuals. You always feel good when you buy something from a person, right where that money's going. And
well, what about just creating something of your own and tailoring it to yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there you take an idea and you make an improvement on it because it fits you and your life better.
Absolutely.
I mean, how gratifying can that be? Is that something that you do and your wife and brother?
Yeah. Yeah. We take, we find ideas on Pinterest all the time and kind of put our spin on them and, decorate our house with that kind of stuff. And
I think what's ironic is we're talking about it as this new movement and this new wave, but it's how things used to always be.
Yeah.
But we kind of got away from it, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, but I think the internet, I mean, I don't think they're opposing. I think the best part is the internet and technology makes all of this more possible, whereas before you might be a hobby woodworker, but now, I mean, you can learn from the best and buy tools and learn how to do all these things, without having to travel forever.
Yeah, elevates the level.
Oh yeah,
the quality. Really,
I would challenge a listener to go to Etsy and try to find something that's not on there. I mean, it's.
I was just gonna ask Josh. Leave us with a nugget here. Do you have any advice for people that maybe haven't heard of this at the depth that we're talking today, and this interests them? They maybe want to arrange flowers, or they want to make something for gifts or something that's going to impact their life. Do you have any advice? You've been through this. You've seen how it can get a little crazy, get a little nutty at times. Any advice for folks?
Well, I mean, I'd say just go out, and the great thing about these sites is that they're endless, or seemingly endless. You go to Pinterest, I mean, you can waste a day on there.
Yeah, you've got to be careful about the rabbit hole.
I've heard a very young person I was talking to yesterday talking about how, finals week, they're looking, it's very stressful, and she and her friends, you want to procrastinate a little bit, boom, you hit Pinterest, and you can just browse. For hours and hours. So maybe don't let it get away from you.
Right. Don't let it get away from you. But you can, you can kind of hone in on what you're trying to find and come up with lots of different takes on it, different ideas.
Super. Well, Josh Rick from String Theory Luthieri, String Theory Music on Facebook.
Correct.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have to take a break quick. You're welcome to stay the rest of the show, but we gotta go away and thank some fine folks. When we come back, we'll maybe wrap up discussion on this topic. We've got a lot of other things. We've got Apple to talk about, and this whole NSA thing, I think, is kind of simmering, and we need to lance that and let that heal. But we'll get back to all that after this quick break. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. It's Friday the 14th. It's going into Father's Day weekend. We want to wish everybody a happy Father's Day. And if you're traveling, travel safely. Our next program will be June 28th. So join us in a couple of weeks. And then, oddly enough, with the schedule and things in July, we're on once. Once on the air. Let me just tease you that way. We're on live on the air once July 19th.
You're teasing me. I don't even know you're talking.
Mark that date. Yeah, exactly. We're coming to you live today from SDN Communications in Sioux Falls, our 800 number. If you have a question about anything we just talked about or what's maybe impacting your life with technology, 1-800-524-3604 is the phone number. And the popular choice is the email address, midday@sdpb.org. And, of course, if you're on Facebook right now browsing around looking at those photos you'd love to look at, type in /techradio at the end of facebook.com and come to our page and like it and maybe make a comment or a question there. We would love to hear from you that way as well. I want to thank Josh for joining us today from String Theory Luthieri, and appreciate all his comments on that. Guys, we've had a lot of technology news. It seems to be dominating the airwaves these days, but let's start with something. I see you guys have a couple of Apple computers in front of you. We had a big keynote.
Yeah, this week, I think it was it Monday? Already? Yeah, Monday.
Monday,
already.
It was.
Apple did their keynote for their annual Worldwide Developers Conference, which is kind of a big conference for them. What it is people who make things for either the iOS, their mobile platform, or the Mac in general, go there to learn about new technology. And basically, you know, they can ask questions and say, hey, we're having problems with this software or that software, or we need to know how to do this. It's basically Apple hands-on tech support and learning for all these developers. But every year they also do a keynote, much like all the Mac worlds. Mm-hmm. And this year was probably one of the biggest Worldwide Developer Conferences for technology release and announcements. There wasn't a new iPhone, which I think most people in the know were aware that there wasn't going to be. I think a few people were
disappointed. The public expected it.
Well, I think people are under the false impression that Apple's going to release a new iPhone every time they go to, you know, anywhere, or a new iPhone or an iPad.
Is that because there just seems to be a new Android phone all the time?
Well, I think people they're excited about their devices. Yeah, they're excited about their devices, and they hear that Apple's in the news, and they're hoping that it's a new device.
Oh, okay.
However,
yes.
But what was there?
There was lots of great news. You know, I'll just bang out a bit of it.
Steve Jobs here just teasing them.
Yeah, that's right. The first thing they talked about and updated was their MacBook Air. It was a pretty significant upgrade, but no form factor change, nothing major other than it's cheaper and faster, you know. So
speed and
great, you know, great stuff, and you know, some more technology, more storage. They've made them more affordable. They also announced that that's their most popular laptop, basically.
Hmm. That surprised me, actually.
It surprised me too. Right up to the point where I guess I'm sitting in front of one, so it shouldn't. I think the new one's gonna be pretty awesome. Oh, one of the big announcements there was though about double the battery life. So their 13-inch MacBook Air is supposed to go 10 hours on battery.
Oh, wow. That's iPad-like.
Yeah. It's very significant, so that'll be interesting. The other hardware announcement, it's not released yet, but their Pro-line Mac, which hasn't had a lot of love in years, the Mac Pro, which is the kind that's used by enterprise and design, you know, audio designers, graphic designers, they completely are going to revamp that, and it's going to be about a third the size, and it's shaped like nothing else. So you basically have to go to the website.
It looks like a canister. You get your checks in when you do the drive-up bank window.
Yeah, it looks like that evil space alien robot from Star Trek IV. It's just a cylinder, and it's solid black. It's kind of an amazing. It's very hard to describe. It's just a cylinder, black cylinder, but you know, they've made it faster and they've made it smaller. And I really think they're going to try and they didn't announce pricing or anything, But they, I think they're going to try and get that into the hands of people that maybe have been making do with cheaper Macs.
And it should be known that, that particular computer still needs a monitor or a display.
Yeah, it's kind of the last thing they have that doesn't have an integrated display. So that's big news, certainly for them. Other big news for the Mac platform is OS X Mavericks. They've changed their naming system. That's big news for some people. They're no longer
more
going
cute animals.
With,
no more cats.
No more cats, and now they're going to go with, in this case, a surfing location in California. They're just going California-based locations. Mavericks is a
fighter pilot in a
well, Mavericks with an S at the end.
Oh, Mavericks.
Yes.
Okay.
But probably the part that's going to impact people the most
is the iOS 7, both for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and the iPad. And interestingly, it's going to be compatible all the way back to the second generation of the iPad and all the way back to the iPhone 4, which is pretty far back for Apple, frankly. New version of Siri, you can choose the voice, and it's more human. Going forward, I knew that they would do that.
Male or female.
Yeah, right, male or female. And the OS, how it looks has been completely redesigned by the person that has done all the product design, Johnny Ive, who makes the outside of all the devices that we think are the best-looking devices on the planet. I think most people would agree that they have amazing industrial design. He had a hand actually in the operating system this time, first time ever.
The GUI or the...
Graphical user interface. And not just the icons and pictures, but how things flow. Because that's really what industrial designers are great at, is making things work for people, not just how they look. Lots of amazing updates in that, and that's going to be released in the fall. One that kind of gets pushed aside is there's going to be iOS integration in cars. They announced about 16 manufacturers of cars are going to basically have what would amount to iOS built into your car. So you'll be able to use things like Siri and the Maps program and whatever in your car. You won't have to plug
it. So built into your entertainment system and navigation system is going to be...
That is
based on this.
That's amazing. I don't know how they're going to pull that off, but that's going to be a revenue stream.
Well, and noticeably, the biggest change in the iOS is just the design, the look and feel. So it's very the new kind of trend of flat design. So not a lot of depth, not a lot of gradients.
Yeah,
in the buttons.
Except they've added motion sensing backdrops for everything. So if you have your picture of your kid in the background, as you move the phone, that picture moves, but the icons don't. So what it gives you is the illusion that it's the picture is actually about an inch further back from the icons. You have to watch the video to actually see what I mean. But they've gotten their 3D not from pixel on pixel, but from basically 3D animation.
And this is an update for the phone that you already have.
Right.
Okay.
Any new phone moving forward, it would be standard.
This is phones and
tablets.
Tablets.
So you would, not yet, but soon you will plug your phone into your computer and download the update.
Yeah, or actually, no, you'll be able to do it over the air. And it won't be, it's supposed to be in the fall. And I think it'll coincide with their OS X Mavericks. There are a lot of cross compatibility features with their desktop and their mobile operating system. You know, probably way too many things to talk about in iOS 7 than we could do today, but I highly recommend watching the video if you're interested. It's right on Apple's, splash page, just at apple.com.
Well, E3 happened recently as well. Let's go to Jeff. We haven't heard from you today, and we want to get you in on the show. And first of all, any comments on anything that's elapsed so far today? And then let's get some E3 news.
I'll just say the Apple conference, if you go live, is really long, but really worth it. Lots of interesting things on both sides. I will mention there is one feature that will not be backward compatible outside of the iPhone 5 and last generation Touch, but I cannot remember off the top of my head. It was a minor feature, so, but that's all in the notes and stuff, and I'd highly recommend that's come out. And this conference happens every year, and it's always the time to get the peek at the new operating system. The developers will actually have the new operating system here shortly after this conference so that they can start writing their apps for it. So lots of good things, a different direction for Apple in many ways on the design and stuff. It will be interesting to see how it comes up. I kind of like the new design and new parallax effects they're doing with the kind of fake depth. But
sure. So E3 recently as well. Tell us what E3 is, and then any big news we need to know about there.
Well, E3 is for gaming, kind of what the Apple conference was for the Apple developers. It's an actually insider show. It's not for the general public, but it's to showcase what's coming up over the next year for gaming, be it PC gaming, console gaming, even tablet gaming, all that kind of stuff. So this year, because it's a console refresh year, that news kind of overshadowed all the other interesting news coming out. A lot of games coming out on tablet, a lot of old PC games coming out on iPads, for example.
Nice.
But the big news, of course, is the Microsoft Xbox One, their new console, which they set a date for, and you can actually pre-order. And, of course, the Sony PlayStation 4, which they haven't set the date for, but you can pre-order. It will be this fall. And basically the entire Internet hating on Microsoft and their new console.
Is that warranted?
Well, in general gaming specs, it probably is. The PS4 will be $100 less, 30% more powerful in raw specs, and won't have game blocking technology, which I should explain a little bit. The Microsoft Xbox One has to be connected to the Internet at least once daily, because when you get a game, right now you play it off a disc in a current console, and that's how you would do it in the PS4. And you can take that disc and you can sell it back to GameStop and trade it in for user games and all this kind of stuff. The Xbox One's more like the current PC market, where you get a disc, you put the disc in, it's going to install the game on the hard drive. You cannot run it off the disc. And also the game manufacturers, because you register and you have to be on the Internet at that point, can block that game from ever working on any other Xbox One ever. It's kind of up to the game distributor, but it basically kills the used market game if the manufacturer decides not to let you do it, because the disc is worthless after you've installed it to your Xbox One. Of course, the Xbox One is coming with a lot of non-gaming features that the PS4 isn't. But will that stray, you know, people who just want to do gaming? The impression from the conferences, everybody is, Microsoft kind of already lost, without even releasing a product yet, lost this generation. But we will see for sure in the fall. They will have their exclusive games, and certain people really like Microsoft and will stick with them. But Sony really, you know, knocked it out. The PS4 may be as popular and
so when's the PS4 come out?
Industry defining as the PS2 was.
Sure. When's the 4 come out, Jeff?
Sorry, what was that?
When does the PS4 come out?
The PS4 isn't dated yet. You can pre-order it. There's this saying sometime this fall. Everyone expects it to be within days or a week of the Xbox One release in November.
December 31st is what I heard is the official ship date. I heard that as of last night.
Yeah. It'll be out before Christmas, though. It won't be December 31st. They all need their Christmas season. That is the big time for the console gaming business. So,
Jeff, you mentioned a couple of features on the Xbox One that wouldn't be there on the PlayStation 4. What can you give me an example of what a couple of those are? Is that they have to do with DVDs or...
if you're familiar with Windows 8, the Xbox One new dashboard is a lot like Windows 8 and has the same functionality for apps. A lot of Internet TV functions where it can control your TV. You can share your tablet screen with your TV. Like you're watching a movie on the TV, it automatically syncs with the tablet. You can move on and off. They've had that a little bit for the original Xbox 360. Insert apps you could download, but they integrate much more on the Windows 8 side for it to be more seamless. There's also a lot more online, you know, kind of programming through the Gold membership and stuff outside of, you know, downloading games and stuff. Video conferencing opens up because you get to Kinect with an Xbox One. An Xbox One comes with the second generation of Kinect for that video and audio. Which is also making a lot of people mad, because Microsoft already said that as long as Xbox has power, the video and audio on the Kinect are running all the time, So if they wanted to record everything you do, and we'll get more into this with the NSA and Microsoft's role, they have an open microphone and video in your room where your Xbox One is all the time. But they have that functionality. The PlayStation says they have a microphone built in too, but Microsoft's really been pushing the Kinect for seamless video audio interaction with your TV, with your gaming, all that kind of stuff. They really want to become the basically the brains of your whole of your entertainment center for both internet content and, you know, disc content and all and everything in between.
Is the video conferencing that you do, is that Xbox to Xbox, or does that get out there to people with PCs and tablets and Macs and everything else, like a Skype-like thing?
I would, because Microsoft owns Skype. Now, I haven't seen this and heard for sure, but I would bet that it's a full Skype client, and anyone with Skype would be able to interact with you. some people still may not realize, but Microsoft bought Skype a few years ago, and they've actually, the Windows 8 Skype is built in, and really, an Xbox run is running Windows 8 tiles. It's really kind of what's running, but it's a lot of dedicated gaming hardware under the hood.
Great. Well, let's take another quick break. I know it's coming on fast today, but we've got a lot to get through yet. A reminder, this is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604 if you'd like to get in on the discussion. You can also send us an email if you've got a question or a comment. That's midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Our number is 1-800-524-3604. The email address, midday@sdpb.org. Again, the next program, if you'd like to get that in your Google Calendar or whatever, is June 28th. And again, on July 19th are our next two shows. So please join us for those. And in between, join us on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio. If you have any questions, comments, want to share a link with us, some knowledge on making a candle or something you found on Pinterest, we would we'd like to take a look at that if there's something on there. Maybe
for the apocalypse.
Hack your own gaming case or something. I don't know. Or 3D print a whiz-a-ma-jig that's going to fix something. I don't know. How can you possibly tell what's going to come up next? I don't know. So we've had, I want to get into this before we get, the show is over. There's been a lot in the news about the latest scandal in Washington about the NSA and privacy and all that. And so what I've done to sort of prepare people for this discussion is on Facebook, I've put a post, and it's actually a fairly interesting story from NPR on like some of the terminology of to help you understand what they're talking about, because a lot of these terms that they're using to describe this story are maybe over people's heads. They don't understand the full complexity of it, baffles them, and they really need a primer on some of this terminology. And we try to back up and explain things as much as we can on this show. And so apparently NPR has done the same thing. So it's almost like a Wikipedia type explanation about some of the terms in this whole thing. But so we had a gentleman that was a contractor for the NSA that came out and with revelations that maybe in the end weren't quite so much revelations, Jeff. Maybe you should have saw this coming.
Well, for the NSA, remember the NSA's mission is communication interception for outside the United States. Its main goal is counter intelligence and communication is its focus. If people remember back in the 1990s stuff, there was a Project Echelon that the NSA kind of got disclosed that was it, where they were working with many other countries, many of our allies was actually helping, where they were recording all the phone calls bouncing off all the satellites back at the time. Many of the telephone calls back then in NASA were done that way. Now they're all over fiber cables and not so as easily to intercept, though not as impossible. you know, the NSA has been kind of doing this forever. And for the most part, especially with number recording and stuff, this is kind of just a growth of what they've been doing from the 80s and 90s. Technology's gotten better. I'm kind of interested, and we'll see how, if there's more leaks on the Internet side, how much of that data they're collecting. We know on the phone that it's basically who's calling who. And maybe some keywords, especially with international calls in and out of the United States to certain countries, more recording and stuff. But at least it's just, for the most part, just who's calling who, and then they go to the court order later and then use it as a kind of reactive mechanism to go back and check once they find out about a bad guy. I'm kind of more interested in the data side and how far and how much data they're actually collecting because, you know, yes, I know they have a lot of supercomputers and a lot of facilities, but if they were going to collect everything, think of about the amount of storage they would need and processing power and money they it would take to record everything on the Internet. So
now, and this is the concern of companies like Microsoft and Google and companies like that, is they want to be able to tell us just exactly what the scope is, and they're being restricted from doing that because they're saying, you know, it maybe isn't as invasive as you might draw conclusions that it is.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we, the users, are thinking or blaming the NSA or blaming, you know, Facebook, tell me what you're doing with your data, with my data. You know, how are you using it? And you're right, they sometimes can't.
Are they going to be able to succeed and be allowed to maybe disclose what they're being asked to disclose?
It depends on the FISA court, and I should inject this. It's actually even illegal for Microsoft or Google to admit that they've ever been asked to give their data out under these contracts. And even the NSA, the rumor is NSA wants to disclose this. The problem is it actually has to go through a secret court that's set up in the judicial side called FISA. And the FISA court has to approve both the warrants that happen and all this interaction and also any leak of or disclosure of information. So it's going to kind of depend on what the FISA court decides. I know they're thinking about it. There's been, you know, leaks about they're swaying to releasing certain information of how much they're actually gathering.
Okay. So you used the word contract a little bit ago, and I want to make sure I got this correct. It's not really a contract with the NSA and these companies. It's a warrant
right.
That these companies have been served. And in most cases, well, is that 100% true, or can the NSA go and ask without a warrant and be provided with information as well?
Well, they can ask for certain things, and so can any law enforcement. Sort of like number taps and stuff where you're just recording who's calling who. Does it require a full warrant to get, though? If you actually want to use information later or you know, do any recording thing, then, yes, you have to get the full warrant. So there's different degrees, and especially for, like, email. I don't know how many people know this, but any email that's been on a storage server, be it a local company or whatever, past 188, is open to warrantless requests, which means any law enforcement agency can go grab the email without a warrant at any time if it's been stored for a set amount of time. There's a lot of movement to change that, and that pertains just to email. But if you leave your email on, like, Gmail, whatever, past, I think it might be 90 days or 180 days, any law enforcement agency can get it without a warrant.
Do you think, so what's the reaction to this, Jeff? Are people getting back into, let's just say, encryption, or are people becoming more paranoid about this, or are the people that were going to be paranoid about this in the first place already at DEFCON 4, and the rest of the general public doesn't know what to make of it, so they're not quite so concerned?
Right. The people have something to hide, of course, and we've talked about this in several stories, like Verizon giving up the guy who was storing child porn on their servers and stuff like that, and they found that and contacted law enforcement, and he was arrested. People with stuff to hide are probably, you know, going through the roof right now. I don't think the general populace, without understanding exactly what they're gathering, it's kind of hard to make a judgment at this time. They should probably disclose it. I agree with that because there are privacy concerns and overreach. And just because you need a warrant legally to do it doesn't mean, like, this person who broke the story means doesn't mean someone in the NSA just doesn't do it illegally and gain access to information they should not have and could be selling and stuff. We've seen that in many state DMZs and stuff where, you know, the people working there are accessing the information illegally and selling it off, and it's a big, big problem with identity theft and stuff. So, you know, what are the controls that actually keep the access? If this guy's story is right, there seems to be very little security control controlling inside who gains access to stuff they shouldn't have any access to.
And I think that's some of the reaction we're seeing today from some congressmen saying, well, wait a minute, there are checks and balances. This isn't the whole story, and maybe this story it isn't adding up. But that's I think that's all to be determined by further reporting.
It's messy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Amos, did you have a comment? I saw a blip on the radar over there.
Just that, you know, it's one of those things that if the only place that you're getting your information is the small blurb that you get at the 5:30 news, sometimes you can overreact because of the terminology that they use and the fact that they say that Verizon, specifically in this case, is giving all of your information to the NSA or that Google has access to all of your information. Jeff alluded to it before, or actually mentioned it, the fact that it's mostly metadata, the fact that it's your phone number, the calls that you made, how long they are. It's not an actual recording of that call. And it's not that they sit and listen to every single phone call. I mean, they don't have the storage for that. They don't have the time for that. It's just merely a collection of data so that if they have a question on, you know, where's this phone number, and how is it related to maybe some terrorist attacks, they've got a place to go back and look at.
I saw kind of a collective gasp, I guess, the other day when they talked about a data center that was opening up in Utah. And are you familiar with the specs that they've released on that? And did that surprise you, or is this just an enterprise-size data center, in your opinion?
So, well, and Jeff alluded to it, the fact that the amount of data storage that would be required in order to store all of this information is unbelievable. And so then it did come out that in Utah there is the mega repository that is supposed to be storing so much data that the building is physically ginormous.
I actually heard that word used in a news report.
I think that's the actual the official technical term.
Architectural size.
So they were saying that that the number is measured in yoda bytes, which is one of those kind of terms that we that
yoda
we yoda yotta.
Oh, okay.
Not
yes,
yoda.
Okay.
Yoda.
Wow.
Right. It's measured in yoda bytes, and as far as the exact number, I'm not sure. But when you talk about yoda bytes, then that's not one thing we hear very often. But you know, 5 years ago, we didn't hear gigabyte very often either.
Sure.
So 1,000 gigabytes is in a terabyte, and that's something we hear a little more commonly. Mm-hmm. So then you take that times 1,000, and you get a petabyte. So then you take that times another 1,000, and you get an exabyte. And then you multiply that times 1,000, and you get a zettabyte. And yet another 1,000 multiplication, and then you're up to the yottabyte. And so we're talking the number of pieces of data are just unbelievable, and the machinery that it takes and needs to be housed in a physically large facility. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going on in Utah. It's a very large, very, very interesting from a technical, nerdy standpoint.
2 weeks from today, Amos will be quizzing the listeners.
Yes.
The levels of bytes.
And all I'm going to think of is Yoda and, you know, raising an X-Wing fighter out of the swamp or something. I don't know.
There is no try.
With his mind. Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate the follow-up on that story. Again, it's going to be an interesting one as it plays out on Facebook and as it plays out in the news and on Slashdot and everywhere else, I guess. And we'll see what happens, and maybe we'll have just a brief update in a couple of weeks.
Sure.
On that. But we are getting down to the tail end of the show. Is there anything else anybody wanted to mention before we take off today? You got a big concert coming up this weekend or anything?
I do not. It's Father's Day this weekend. Happy Father's Day.
Absolutely.
Let's say thanks to all the dads.
You bet. Buy your dad some new tech for Father's Day. See, there's all kinds of stuff out there.
What should they get their dad for?
A Yoda bite.
A Yoda bite of just about anything.
A bite of anything.
Right.
Would probably make them happy. Again, thank you so much for your time today. I want to thank our panelists, Joel Brovelite Amos Aesop from SDN Communications, Nine Clouds, John T. Meyer, and Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, an MP3 version of the show and podcast is available on the web soon. listen.sdpb.org for that. Again, join us on June 28th. Stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. NPR News is next, followed by Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. Have a great weekend, everybody.